You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. When it comes to taking risks, it seems like not all of us are created equal. Some of us will jump at the chance to pick up and move across the country or jump out of an airplane, while others seem to shy away from risk, preferring the comfort and stability that a daily routine can provide. That's me. But why is that?
Well, our next guest has studied the science that goes into risk-taking and the factors that go into whether or not we're likely to pump the gas pedal or the brakes when it comes to risk. In addition, she says that by better understanding risk, we can learn to be better and smarter risk-takers, leading to both professional and personal success in our everyday lives.
Kate Sukel joins us now. She's a science writer and author of the new book, The Art of Risk, The New Science of Courage, Caution, and Chance. Kate, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited about it.
Kate, let's talk about what risk is. You write that a lot of us, when we think risk, we go to the extremes, kind of like a heroic risk of a soldier at war, maybe, or a foolish risk of, I don't know, jumping into a pool full of sharks or something. You say risk is actually something in our everyday lives. So how do we define it?
So simply put, you know, risk is just dealing with uncertainty. It's making a decision where you have a potentially negative outcome. And so when you break it down to something that simple, all of a sudden, you know, every single decision you make every single day, that's whether to have that third cup of coffee in the morning, you know, that might wake you up at, you know, 2 in the morning wanting to, like, pace your bedroom walls, or that's whether you're about to move across the country, take a new job, or jump in that pool with sharks. Who, by the way, don't really like to eat humans, so you'd probably be okay.
Yay. Well, and you say when we're looking at an important decision, and one that you were going through as you wrote the book, whether or not to get married, it's really a matter of risk assessment.
That is true. I had gone through a pretty painful divorce a few years earlier, and this man asked me to marry him, and he seemed like a good bet, but how was I supposed to know? But really, again, it comes down to that assessment. There's uncertainty. How comfortable are you? How can you think through the equation? What factors are really important? And luckily, you know, I learned enough from my first marriage and learned enough from my new partner that it sort of helped me figure out whether or not I should take the leap and jump that broom or go home and keep watching on The Bachelor.
Well, and another kind of misconception your book cleared up for me, I always think there's just a continuum. On one end are the me's out there who avoid risk whenever possible. The other end are the really impulsive risk takers. But you kind of introduced a new category, smart risk takers. So it's possible to calibrate ourselves to know when and how to take a risk.
Definitely. And this sort of goes back to these extremes, because I think that we have to be very careful when we talk about risk taking. And in fact, when you talk to psychologists and epidemiologists these days, they're actually being more careful, because there's risk taking and then there's impulsive behavior. Mm-hmm. And certainly historically, you know, scientists have looked at negative risk taking behaviors, the things that are going to land you in jail, the things that are going to, you know, get you dead or injured or hurt other people. And obviously, those aren't the risks that we want to take. Those aren't the things that are going to help us do better in life and achieve our dreams. Nobody really accomplished much from the inside of a jail cell or, you know, from underground. But there is a way to approach risk to make it work for you, especially, again, since every single decision, you know, has that element of uncertainty. Once you become more comfortable with it, once you become more knowledgeable about how the brain actually deals with this uncertainty, and it is sort of more of an art than a science, hence the book title, you really can make it work for you.
And a big lesson you draw from people who we think of as risk-taking, the person who climbs that mountain without the backup oxygen supply, or the deep-sea diver, or the bold investor, they actually, what looks to us as a risky thing, the people who are doing it and doing it well take as much of the risk out of it as they can in a lot of ways.
It was so interesting to me. I talked to a number of risk takers for this book, including Steph Davis, who is a base jumper and free solo climber. You may know her as the only woman that Cliff Bar dropped from their sponsorship ranks because they decided that she's too risky. I talked to Andy Frankenberger, who's a World Series of Poker champion. I talked to a neurosurgeon, a firefighter, a special forces operator. And time and time again, they would all tell me, you know, I really don't think of myself as a risk taker. I don't think that what I do is all that risky. And you'd kind of push them on it and be like, you jump off cliffs, you know, rappel from helicopters into enemy combat situations. And they really talked about how they really prepare for these different things. People only see the outcome. They don't see all the work that goes into, you know, these big payouts. And really, you know, it's the little things that they do every day that help them, you know, handle those big decisions, those big ticket choices when they meet up with them in life. And that was fascinating to me because that means that it's not that Steph Davis is wired differently than me or she's just somebody who can, you know, handle this stuff and I can't. What that means is that we all have this ability. It's just a matter of thinking about risk in a different way.
Talking to Kate Sukul about her new book, The Art of Risk, The New Science of Courage, Caution, and Chance. And Kate, I want to follow up that last point you made. The person who looks like a risk taker isn't necessarily hardwired. And that's another thing I'd kind of thought, like, hey, some people are born to do that wild stuff. Some people are not. But it's more complicated than that.
It is. I mean, certainly some people are more wired for sensation. They need a little bit more stress in their life. They find joy in things like, you know, jumping out of airplanes or whitewater rafting or what have you. But a lot of times that's not necessarily just biology. That's also sort of opportunity and environment. You can think of something like taking the subway. Now, you know, I went to school in New York City. I love the subway. It works for me. It's so easy to use. But I have friends who aren't familiar with it. They go to New York City, and they freak out about it. They're convinced they're going to be mugged. They're going to die on the train. They're going to get lost. And they get really, really upset about it. But then you take that New Yorker who knows the subway inside and out, and you take them, you know, maybe to some back roads in Door County or what have you, and they may be like, wait a minute, this road isn't marked. I have no idea where I'm going. My GPS isn't working. What's going on? So a lot of it really is kind of familiarity and opportunity. And so even as we say, oh, this person must be so different, they just had a different, you know, background. They have a different preparation. And so they found this domain, whether it be base jumping or race car driving or what have you, where they can sort of find that kick for novelty and for excitement and a certain stress level that motivates them.
And you share some lessons about dealing with risk and being smart risk takers. And that's one of them is to, before you make that big leap, do some homework, get familiar with the context in which you're taking that risk, and then you're going to make smarter decisions, more measured decisions.
Correct. And, you know, what's so fascinating to me, again, is that so much of the work shows that whether or not you think something is risky, whether you perceive a situation as risky, really depends on how familiar you are with it. I remember talking to my great-grandmother about snowboarding. Now, she just thought that this was the most ridiculous thing ever. You know, why would you go snowboarding? You're going to hurt yourself. It just looks silly. You're just asking, you know, to crash your head in or what have you. But she's not familiar with it. She doesn't know about it. But now, you know, that same great-grandma, you know, was happy to drive around in all those cars that, you know, had those sharp tail fins that would take an arm off in an accident. Didn't think twice about it. So it really, how we perceive risk has a lot to do with where we came from, what we're familiar with, what our friends are doing, and it really can shape the risk equation in interesting ways.
But there can be a downside of that if our circle of friends is doing some kind of negative, dangerous behavior, high risk, no reward, a heroin use or something like that. That can change our mental perception of that risk and make it feel to us less risky.
That is true, and that is something to think about when you are thinking about more negative risks. Now, but these are things that we also hear a lot about, mm-hmm. right? We know that narcotic use probably isn't going to be in our favor. And so we certainly public outreach programs are helpful in that regard. I think the real difference, though, is when we're talking about negative versus a positive risk. And certainly our social circles are going to influence what we're familiar with and what we feel comfortable with. Is that, you know, that comes into doing homework. Are we relying too much on those social circles? Are they giving us information that may be incorrect or isn't helping us out? And again, that's where, you know, sometimes it helps to take a step back, take a moment, and ask yourself, wait a minute, is this actually leading me where I want to be? Is this going to help me achieve my long-term goals?
One thing that struck me is the role of stress in measuring risk. You say no stress actually doesn't help. Too much stress is bad, but there's a Goldilocks just right spot for stress when we're making that decision.
absolutely. You know, we've really turned stress into a dirty word, right? It's supposed to be mitigated, avoided at all costs. It's a bad, bad thing. And if we're not going to yoga every week or meditating or, you know, going to happy hour, we have a problem. But what we don't seem to realize is that stress, it's a biological process that's there for a reason, and it's there to motivate us. Certainly when we talk about extremes, it's there to motivate us to, you know, fight or fly. But in the medium, you know, think about just something as simple as a final exam. If you don't have a little bit of stress about it, you're probably not going to study and do well. If you're not a little bit stressed about, you know, working on that business deal, you're not going to put in the time to make sure that it's done just right. So you really do want that stress-happy medium. The trick, however, is that it varies substantially from person to person. Some people, even, you know, a little bit of stress can sort of knock them out of whack. And then we have some people, and one of these people was the Army Special Forces operator that I spoke to. You know, nothing fazes him. I mean, you can freeze him, you can heat him up, you can shoot things at him, and he's still pretty stable. So there is a wide range of individual differences, and the trick is finding your own stress happy medium, just enough to get you up and motivated, to get you, you know, to work at the edge of your performance ability and improve your skill set and do better, but not so much that, you know, you're ready to cry or kill somebody or hide in your closet for the next week.
We're talking right now with Kate Sukel, author of the book, The Art of Risk. She says we all take risks all the time, whether we realize it or not. And by understanding risk a little bit better, we can make better, smarter choices.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you consider yourself to be a risk taker? What's the biggest risk that you ever took, and did it pay off? How do you weigh risk in your personal and your professional life? And what questions do you have about the brain science behind risk taking? Call us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're talking about risk, what it is, why some of us seem inclined toward risk-taking, and how we can make the most of it. Our guest is Kate Sukel, author of the new book called The Art of Risk.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Tell us about a time that you took a risk. What was it? How did it work out? Would you do it again? Lessons learned? How do you assess risk in your everyday life? The old positive and negative list? What do you do? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go right to our callers. Mark is on the line in Howard. Mark, hi.
Hey, I'm just calling in from Howard, Wisconsin here, and I wanted to chime in and say that my entire life, it's been risk has always been like the funnest thing to get to do. From an early age, playing baseball, I wanted to play pitcher, started racing motocross, fly-powered paraglider, and I think it really comes down to that. The nervous, the adrenaline, the excitement becomes almost addicting. You look forward to the next time that you can get out, and you become kind of a risk management. You're always weighing the risk versus reward. But it almost is, it's a very powerful, adrenaline is almost like a powerful drug that you get addicted to.
Does that worry you a little, Mark?
No, I love it.
All right. Thanks a lot for that call. So, Kate, we get a little addicted to that adrenaline rush of taking a risk.
Well, and that's what we were saying about the certain amount of stress to motivate you. It releases these brain chemicals that really does get you going. Things like, you know, the adrenaline, it also releases dopamine, which is often called the pleasure chemical, although that's a bit oversimplified, which is also really rewarding and motivating force. So definitely when you're dealing with uncertainty and it works out for you, that is a huge deal. That is a huge boost, and it's a boost to learning. It's a helps you with risk management, like he said, and really does give you a rush. And certainly that's why some people go after risk. So I understand what he's saying, but it really does come back to the successful risk taker. Even when they are seeking out those kind of sensations, are the ones who manage it out. They're not, you know, saying, "Oh my gosh, I want this rush so much. I'm not going to wear a helmet while I'm doing motocross, or I'm, you know, just going to take off on this very, very dangerous jump without, you know, for the first time without any training." So I think that's the difference. It's step by step. It's working at the edge of your performance ability, and it's measuring out those risks so that you can be successful and still get that rush, but, you know, without losing your head.
Mark, thanks a lot for that call. We'll go next to Jen in Milton. Jen, hi.
Hi there. I actually have a question in regard to birth order. So I was just wondering, is there a link to the order that you were born and taking risks?
Jen, thanks for that call. Kate, I don't remember if I saw that in your book. Is there some kind of birth order risk index?
Well, you know, there are some studies, and of course, they tend to contradict one another, but the sort of common wisdom is that the older siblings tend to be a certain kind of risk taker, and that they plow forward, they blaze new trails, and they tend to be the more successful kind of risk takers. They have to take into account the rules. They're the first child, so often they have a little more scaffolding from their parenting around that they have to work around, et cetera, and they can be very successful. But then a lot of studies also show that the babies of the family, the youngest, they tend to be a little bit more impulsive. So I think that there is some work that suggests that birth order can affect things, but as always, with some of these studies, your mileage may vary. It's going to depend on a lot on the parenting environment, their involvement, what activities they have to work it out. But there probably is a little bit of an effect.
Talking to Kate Sukel about risk. Her new book is called The Art of Risk. Kate, we had a caller who couldn't stay on the line named Alex in Eau Claire said, hey, I'm quitting my job in Wisconsin, moving to Colorado, nervous, he is about it going wrong, his new plan there. And I wanted to ask you about that failure part of it. You say part of being a good risk taker is knowing how to bounce back and how to learn when you've taken a risk that didn't pay off.
Definitely. So I guess the thing I would say to Alex first and foremost is that it's a risk to stay, too. So if you weren't going to make this change, then you'd always be thinking, what if I had gone to Colorado? And so you might have missed out on something great. But let's just say that it doesn't work out for one reason or another. What can you learn from and I don't even know that I would call it a failure. One of the best lines that I heard from, and it was from Steph Davis, again, the base jumper, she doesn't fail. She just hasn't finished yet. Maybe, this is all a bigger long-term quest to find out where you need to be, where you belong. And maybe it's not Colorado, but maybe it's not Eau Claire either. And so maybe this is just another piece of information, another step to help you figure out where you should be going, the kind of job that will fulfill you, the kind of place to live that is going to give you what you need.
And when you mentioned there that staying could be a risk too, that reminds me that the idea that we look at the action we could take as a risk, we don't look at not taking that action as something we might miss out on. So I think of, my kids do soccer. I'm paranoid about concussions, but I let them play because they get a lot of benefits from it. Keeping mm-hmm. them playing it safe and not letting them do that would mean they're not getting a lot that they are getting now.
Right. And actually, I remember this great line from Still Life with Woodpecker, which I guess is, that perennial college student favorite book. Success can eliminate as many options as failure. So often we look at failure as some kind of sign that, okay, we messed up, we can't do this, this isn't what we're supposed to be going after. And we don't realize that sometimes even when we're successful, we've actually just eliminated a lot of options, options that might have taught us some really important lessons, that might have taken us somewhere where we would have actually gotten more, whether that's a better job or a better, relationship or a more fulfilling life. So again, when you start thinking about risk to and risk from, you really start to realize that every single decision you make every single day has this uncertainty involved in it. And so you need to get used to it. You better get a better handle on it, or else you could be missing out on stuff either way.
As we start to wrap up, Kate, it seems like part of your mission is to convince us that risk is not inherently a negative thing.
It's true. I think, what the science definitely says is that risk is necessary. It's not bad. It's not good. We need to stop talking about it in extremes. It's necessary. You need to risk a little bit in order to learn, in order to gain skills, in order to learn how to emotionally regulate, to problem solve, to work with others. I think we all agree, whether we're talking about kids or adults, these are all really positive things. If we continue to talk about risk as something to be avoided at all costs, we're missing the opportunity to really open ourselves up to unbridled possibility. And, I think that would be a darn shame, because that's, I think, what a lot of us need more of is some unbridled possibility.
And you're glad you took the risk to get married again?
I am. I like him very much. Even now, a couple years later, I think I'll keep him.
Fantastic. Kate, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
We've been talking to Kate Sukel. She is the author of the new book on the science of risk. It's called The Art of Risk, The New Science of Courage, Caution, and Chance. Still not going to go skydiving myself anytime soon, but this is, I don't know, this kind of changes the way you think about risk.
You going to take some more risks now? Maybe try some, I don't know, I'm thinking about starting small for you, Rob. Try maybe a new restaurant nearby.
We just did.
That's true, we did, but that was unusual.
Chicken tikka wrap. It was pretty tasty, too. Two of them.
It paid off.
It paid off.